The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to Season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, grit. It's how we measure the coarseness of sandpaper. But for human beings, it means toughness, determination. Can you learn grit? Can you teach grit to your children? Paul Tough, that is his name, author of the bestseller How Children Succeed, Grit, Curiosity, and the Hidden Power of Character, is here to talk about true grit. And that doesn't involve a reference to John Wayne. 2020 has been a show of shit. What we all need is a show of grit. Plus, listener descriptions of our show. How do you capture 90 minutes of conversational madness in a one-line bottle? Our listeners try to put a cork in it. I'm Adam Felber, the man who attempts to use 60 grit sandpaper to smooth out the conversational grooves of this podcast and keep the topical marbles in their tracks. And now, please welcome the woman who's always losing her metaphorical marbles. It's Paula Poundstone, everybody.
Hey!
So nice to be sort of with you. Hey, Adam, and I want to thank tonight's house band, Tim Freeman, returning Tim Freeman on the guitar. Wasn't he our first house band?
He was our very first house band. He's been on, I think, twice since then. He hails from Santa Monica, California, not far from you, Paula. So listen closely. You might hear him down the block.
No, I think I've called the cops on him before for noise. I'm so happy. Tim, thank you for being here.
And one more thing I want to get in here. Tim is with the Freeman Agency now, your source for digital marketing, and you can find him at thefreeman.agency. All right, what's new, Paula Poundstone?
You know, Adam, I was listening to a really good podcast the other day that I highly recommend. I can't remember the name. It's like 2020 War Room or something. But it's Al Hunt and James Carville. And I listen to it every week. And I noticed that every week they talk about, Al will always say, and remember to subscribe to our podcast.
Right.
And I was thinking, are we supposed to be saying that?
Oh. Yeah, definitely.
Didn't,
we should be saying that.
Didn't we used to say that?
We used to say it all the time.
Yeah. So what does it mean when someone subscribes?
Well, most podcast apps, including Apple Podcasts, there's a subscribe button. And if you hit that button, then you don't have to remember to listen to our show. That just, it automatically downloads into your file and lets you know that the new show has arrived every week.
Oh, well, then we should say that.
That could easily increase our listenership.
Yeah. Why did we stop saying that?
I don't know. I would imagine it's Bonnie Burns' fault.
What? No, I think we just got busy, what with the pandemic and all, maybe.
Yeah, that might be it. That's probably what happened.
Which, by the way, I am, you know, This is the kind of thing, though, that thank goodness we got our new intern, Shannon Polly. Shannon, could you come in here? Shannon can probably help us remember each week to say, please subscribe.
Okay. You mean Shannon, who was on our show last week, and we kind of amusingly hired her as an intern? She's actually at your house now?
Oh, yes. Yeah. What do you mean? Yeah, we hired her as an intern.
Yeah. Right, to replace the late and lamented Doug.
Yes, and hopefully she doesn't, you know, come to the same ends. But, oh my gosh, right. She's been so helpful to me. In fact, when I sat down to record today, I had my earphones all ready to go.
I know what you're referencing. I think our listeners might not, but if you subscribe to our podcast and this one gets to you 10 minutes later than usual...
Yeah, we know why
The reason is we had to start recording later than we intended to today because Bonnie Burns forgot her headphones.
And she said, they're downstairs. I have to go get them. And then you could hear a scary, creaky door. And then you could hear her go down the stairs. And then you hear her come back up the stairs. And then she cursed for a while. And I think she went back down the stairs. And then she came back up the stairs. And she said, they were in my pocket the whole time.
Yes, and you know, a detail about that I love is that she said, see, I knew I'd been organized.
Yeah, like, she's
like putting them in your pocket and forgetting about them is a sign of organization.
No, I was very organized and prepared. I knew I had it all together.
Oh, here's Bonnie Burns, everybody.
Hi. And then I sat down for us to start recording, and they weren't here. I couldn't believe it. So I went down, and they weren't there, and that's when I remembered, oh, I put them in my pocket. Then I came back up here, and I couldn't find them in my pocket because they're so stringy, the keys were in the way.
Shannon, could you do me a favor and head over to Bonnie's?
Bonnie, I want to point out
a few minutes. Yeah,
you just told the exact story that Paula just told, only without jokes.
Oh
no,
thank
but
you.
Okay. The difference is that Bonnie was telling this was from her perspective.
It was the first person. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it was grittier. Bonnie, it was more raw. You could feel her pain and frustration.
But, Bonnie, I do want to encourage your future as a Foley artist. Would you mind opening and closing your door for a second?
Okay, I'll do that.
Because I really do want our listeners to hear this, because this is really remarkable.
I don't know what the big deal is about a door that creaks, but okay, I'll do it.
It's like a Disney haunted house effect.
Okay. I will say this. We have a lot of fun talking before the show starts. Okay, get ready.
We definitely do.
All right, I'm ready.
That's not bad.
It's not good.
What's that noise? Is someone
Welcome
there?
Welcome to my podcast.
Who's there behind that door? Come out, show yourself.
I don't care about stuff like
Daddy, someone's there.
I don't care about stuff like that.
What do you mean you don't care about, like, stuff like what?
If your door squeaks, do you?
Do I care if my door squeaks?
Yeah.
No, I don't care. It's just that
I do. I put some WD-40 on the hinges of my door just 2 weeks ago. You know why? Because I record a podcast in this room. Honest to God, I did.
Yeah. Well... You know, I haven't been able to work, and Bonnie makes 15% of what I make, so she is having to find other forms of income as well, and one of the things she's doing for the Halloween season is she's having a haunted house there in Thousand Oaks.
Well, we should get into talking about Halloween very soon, because we know that Bonnie puts the candy outside and hides. But you know what? As long as we're starting our, you know, we started early with Bonnie, which we often do. But Bonnie Burns, up there in the Simi Valley, what's new?
You know, I don't have a lot to talk about. I've been having a good time doing Paula's game show. which we record on Sunday afternoon. And I think it's been mostly nobodies that have been in the audience. And it's been really fun to, you know, put faces to some of the names that have commented on the show. I've really enjoyed that. But I was going to say, you know, I've had a few people take slams at Captain Crinkle on our Facebook page. Even though most people are very supportive.
They love you. They seem to love you.
Most people have been very, very nice.
Captain Crinkle is beloved. Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, most people have been very, very nice. And even some people have said to stop picking on me, which I don't really think you do. But okay.
Fuck them.
I think it's all meant in the spirit of good fun. Okay,
I always thought
this
so.
Was from Kevin Gardner, and here's what he said. Bonnie, who doesn't know a mic works after 30 years in business.
Wow.
And hasn't washed your hair in months, is going to criticize Alyssa Milano's physique and her wardrobe, which was probably pulled by a stylist. And what is Bonnie's excuse? Sorry, asking for Alyssa since I've worked with her, and she's a doll. And what is Bonnie's excuse? Sorry, asking for Alyssa since I've worked with her, and she's a doll. Humor can cross a line.
Boy, you know what's interesting? It's interesting that he doesn't say anything about your inability to read aloud.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he really let you slide on that.
Anyway, but I did want to say one more thing, which is this is really interesting. So, and I'm sure that Kevin Gardner is a really nice person. And I did look him up on Facebook because I was kind of curious about him. And
he
works as a standardized patient. Do you know what that is? I learned something from Kevin.
No.
Okay, there are people that get paid. He's a former actor. They're people that get paid to be patients for doctors in training.
Yep. Oh, wow.
I've done that before. Yeah.
Tony, he's had you've done that spleen. Before?
Tony, did you say you'd done it before?
I've done it for, like psychology students. Like, I've made up, like, problems to tell them.
You made up problems to tell them?
Like, I, like, was given a, like, a, never mind.
you were given, so wait, you made up problems to tell them?
I was given, like a background, so I didn't make up the problems, they were given to me.
You were CIA. Tony, you worked for the CIA. You thought you were training psychology students, but you worked for the CIA. Did any of it involve killing someone?
No.
Yeah, Tony, that was CIA. Yeah.
That would be CIA if that was the case.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised because I did not realize that Alyssa Milano was working her way through med school. Kevin did say he just worked with her, right?
No. Yeah. Well, he did say he'd worked with her and she was very nice. And
he must have been her patient.
I heard she's very nice.
He must have been her patient,
honestly,
is my point.
I don't even know who she is.
She's a cookie, you said. I thought that was really funny.
She's a cookie?
You said that. I thought it was funny.
Oh, yeah. I've been having... Wow. I can't believe Tony made up problems and told them to people that were training to be psychologists.
You know, one of the best jobs, it wasn't a paid job, but one of the best jobs I ever had was I fulfilled that service, and so did my wife, Jeannie, for a friend of ours who was going to massage school.
You told them your problems?
No. Every time she'd learn a new massage technique, she'd need to practice it. Like, it's shiatsu month. I'm about to have my exam. Can you come over?
Oh, wow. You know, I'm kind of jealous of the experience you guys have had because I worked with a young doctor training in skin grafting, and
oh boy,
yeah, it was hell. It was really difficult. You know, I haven't seen you in a while because we've been taping from our homes, But there's a part of the skin from my inner thigh that now just flaps over my nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy got a D.
You should probably get him to remove that.
Yeah. Well, the student got a D, and the teacher wrote "See me" on my forehead.
Wow. So they actually graded on your person as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a big D on my face as well. Remember to subscribe, listeners. Listeners, remember to subscribe.
Yeah. And Kevin, if you're listening, absolutely subscribe.
Did I tell you guys that last week one of my ears was sewn on backwards?
No. That's not even a skin grafting thing. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's what I told the guy.
This guy's bad.
That's what I said to him. I said, wait a minute, you don't even get a D for this. This is an F. This isn't even skin grafting. Yeah, he's probably going to drop out.
This is terrible. I know you're kind of in a tight financial situation now, Paula, what with comedy not being around, but you shouldn't take this gig.
You know, I'm having to cup my hand over the other side of my ear now, which is hard to remember.
I said you shouldn't take this gig. My God. All right, let's continue our journey around the horn, which is quite a slog these days. Let's go to Studio City. Tony Anita Hall, besides being a human guinea pig, lying to doctors about your medical conditions, what's new?
I've been laying on the couch in my underwear, eating cake, and watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
That is...
Wow! Oh, my gosh! How the hell do you stand the pace? That is a lot going on. Is it because, Tony, is it because Kim Kardashian said that this is going to be their last season?
I like caught a couple episodes and then I was invested. And then as you watch it, you think, wow, these are good people.
No, that's ridiculous.
Tony, I thought up until this moment, I thought the most questionable thing that you ever did is book yourself on a cruise for the Corona times.
And then book yourself on another. Yeah.
But Tony, now this...
I feel like you're telling us a story about yourself, about a problem that you have that isn't true, in case we're psychology students, because that's ridiculous. Oh, the Kardashians might be good people. Where did you get such a ridiculous idea?
Because sometimes they use their fame and power for good.
Yeah. After they dumbed the shit out of the entire nation, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If they donated all their money to schools, it wouldn't even make up for that show.
Yeah, honestly. Right. They're in a deep hole. They do have a lot of money. Tony, what possessed you? Like the first time you sat on the couch in your underwear and you had some cake... which is already somewhat odd, but okay, there you are in your underwear with your cake and you pick up the TV clicker. Did you already know what time the show was on? Had you planned it or you were just clicking around and you came across it?
I was just clicking around and I came across it.
How bad must the other shows that you passed have been?
Yeah.
It's easy watching. And it's often on... Like, sometimes I'll pick up my computer, do some emails, and the show's just on in the background, too.
Okay.
So it's just, easy.
Wow.
But sometimes I'm really invested as well. I mean, I just...
Yeah, sounds like it.
I want to keep up with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speaking about keeping up, Paula, do you have a word for us?
I do, which puts me not just keeping up with the Kardashians, but way past them. The word is purulent. It's
what?
An adjective, purulent. It's an adjective that means consisting of, containing, or discharging pus.
Ew.
Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Trump spews lies like a purulent wound.
Wow.
I can't tell you how many people have told me that my vocabulary song has been an invaluable learning tool for them. It's actually not that many. I just can't tell you. That's all. I know the number will grow when I add this word, though. So here we go. Let's see.
All right. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Here we go. This week's word is purulent. It's an adjective that means consisting of, containing, or discharging pus. I hope that never happens to us. Last week's word was seminal. It's an adjective that means of a work or event or idea strongly influencing later developments. The Democratic Convention had virtual celebrants. The week before that we had insouciant. It's an adjective that means carefree, unconcerned, free from care or worry. I'll eat it even if it's furry. Going back before that, we had hyperbolic. It's an adjective that means deliberately exaggerated. This podcast is richly financially compensated. And not long ago, we had lugubrious. It's an adjective that means dismal and sad, like when ducks poop on everything you had. Let's never forget gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until nobody, James Hyder, corrected me. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do, I do.
That was a good one, Paula. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
Woo, woo,
yeah,
boy.
Really. You brought it home.
Encore.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
No. She didn't. No. Nobody meant that.
That was her. That was her practicing saying a problem that she doesn't really have for us.
Yeah, doctor, I've got encore.
Yeah. Purulent. It's an adjective.
Wow, I didn't know that word until this moment. So now I have learned something.
Or discharging pus. Maybe you. Yeah, purulent. That's gross, huh?
Coming up, author Mike Loomis wrote, "Grit is a measurement of sandpaper and determination. In both cases, it defines an ability to change surroundings and not be changed." We'll find out how to get grittier. That's coming up when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Hey, everybody. As longtime listeners know, when Helix Mattresses first started sponsoring our show, Bonnie Burns somehow got the drop on me and made off with the first mattress. But in the intervening years, I have gotten myself a Helix mattress. I've had it for almost a year now, and it has improved my sleep. It has improved my life. I could not be happier. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, which I have, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, which is a mattress designed just for big and tall sleepers, and they even have mattresses made just for kids. Now, if you're like me and you were a little nervous about trying it online, or like Paula, who was screaming in fear of buying a mattress online, don't be. The Helix Sleep Quiz takes into account your individual sleep preference to match you and your partner with the perfect mattress. I took the quiz and I ended up with the great mattress for a side sleeper, the Helix Midnight Lux. Take my word for it, everybody. The Helix Midnight Lux.
Oh, don't want to take Adam's word for it. I don't blame you. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula and use the code HELIXPARTNER20.
This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Paula, I invited you over, but you fell asleep. HelixSleep.com/Paula. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code. On this day in unremarkable history, Lizzie Borden's dad said, well, I don't know what you want it for, but yeah, sure, you can borrow it, so long as you put it back.
And we're back. Thank you, house band Tim Freeman. Tim, it's good to have you back. Paula, 2020 has called for all of us to have some grit, for want of a better word.
Oh, grit's a great word. And I'm hoping it's not too late for me to acquire some of it.
Yeah, because we kind of need it, right? I mean, like, to get through 2020, it will require some true grit, right?
I think it will. And yeah, here's the bad news. It's not just to get through 2020.
Yeah.
I think it's to continue to get persevere. Through
for the rest of our lives. Yeah.
At least 2021. We don't know. You know, I everyone keeps saying, oh, 2020 sucks, and it does. I don't want to take that away from 2020 in any way. But guess what?
What?
2021 is going to be, it's going to have a good deal of suckitude as well.
I think you're right. And as a guy who's raising two kids, I'm pretty happy to have our next guest here. He can answer all our questions about grit. Paul Tough is the author, most recently, of The Years That Matter Most, How College Makes or Breaks Us. His three previous books include How Children Succeed, Grit, Curiosity, and The Hidden Power of Character, which spent more than a year on the New York Times bestseller list. Please welcome Paul Tough.
Thank you.
Hello. What a lovely welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Paul. Okay, why don't we start with this, which is define grit and why we need it.
Okay, so defining grit is actually not as easy as it might seem. So grit, the way that I write about it in my book, How Children Succeed, is the invention, the work of this psychology professor at the University of Pennsylvania named Angela Duckworth, who went on to write a book called Grit. And she defines grit as passion and perseverance for things that you really care about. Like, it's not just the side of grit that I think a lot of us think of, which is a sort of the true grit side, which is just putting up with terrible stuff, right? It's just resilience. It's surviving awful things, right? And that's an important quality, but it's not a very like aspirational one. Like, I really want to just be able to suffer well, right? But the more aspirational grit that Angela talks about and that I read about in my books is about being able to persevere toward a goal, right? Having a goal that you really care about and being able to stick with it despite failures, despite setbacks.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, that's a good definition. Why would you say that we need grit?
Well, I mean, there is a lot of failure in life, right? If we want to accomplish something big, if you want to go out there and make, you know, a podcast, write a book, run for president, do anything hard, raise a family, there are going to be lots of moments where you face setbacks. And those moments where you face setbacks are some of the most important moments in life. So I'm a father to two young boys, a 5-year-old and an 11-year-old. And when I think about any value that I have in their life, it's about helping them through those moments, right? And in lots of ways, that is, I think, what grit is, or the grit that I care about. It's how you deal with those moments of failure. And because those moments are going to come along all the time, if we don't have the character, the preparation to deal with those moments, it's really hard to get anything done. So, you know, one of the things when you, as a journalist like me, when you start looking into this research around grit, you notice that, so these researchers have a definition of grit. There's even a grit scale that you could take where you can measure how gritty you are.
What?
They have not yet. There's a grit scale that Angela Duckworth has come up with. You can find out how gritty you really are.
What are the units on the grit scale? Are they?
It's like, I haven't taken it for a while.
They're not ounces, are they?
Like, no, they're not. You can't actually weigh your grit. It's a self-administered scale. It is not super scientific, but your response to questions like how often do I take up a project and then abandon it halfway? How likely am I to stick with something till the end? It's that kind of self-assessment.
So did you, Paul, you said you've taken this self-administered test before. Did you complete the test?
I did. It takes about 2 minutes. So if you do not answer all the questions, you automatically fail. Yes.
Yeah. I think that's really low on the grit scale. Yeah. I gave up on the third question. That's really,
I threw my computer out the window and cried.
Yeah, I've definitely had those days.
Is it on the computer? Do you find it online, this grit test?
So if you go to Angela Duckworth's website, I think it's possible it's there. I haven't checked for a while, but I think her grit scale is there, yeah.
I think just getting through a Zoom call takes a lot of grit. You know, figuring out if you're in gallery view or speaker view. To me, that takes a lot of grit. You got to stick with it.
That's really true.
I agree. But you were saying
and your friends are all flat. All right, go ahead. Sorry. Okay. So
what I found when I was reporting on these researchers is that they know how to define it, they know how to measure it, they don't know how to teach it. And I'm really convinced that the idea that grit is something that we can just teach like any other academic subject, that like grit worksheets, you know, grit lessons, that any of that will work, I'm really skeptical of. And what I've come to believe in reporting on this is that grit is really the product of a child's environment. So I think some of it is nature. I think there's some kids who get frustrated more frequently, who, overreact to crises. And that's something just intrinsic in them. But most of it, I think, comes from the way, the environment that kids grow up in. And when children grow up in environments that are really stressful, that involve a lot of trauma and difficulty, it makes it harder to develop the kind of internal thermostat that lets you react to adversity in a calm way.
Are you saying I'm making my kids panicky? How dare you? How dare you? God damn it, Paul!
I would think
I don't understand it.
I would think the opposite, Paul. I would think that being faced with stressors and challenges would make someone, toughen up a little bit.
Yeah, I think I think that's a common belief. But I think there's lots of evidence from psychology and economics and neuroscience that the opposite is true. You know, the research about attachment shows that there's this very counterintuitive thing that happens in childhood, that when children, in infants in the first, 18 months of life, live in a very safe, warm, nurturing environment, they are the ones that end up being the most confident, right? They have what psychologists call a secure base from which they can explore the world. And if kids grow up in environments in which they are just left to fend for themselves in those early years, they end up being much more clingy, much more attached. They have a much harder time. And I think the same thing is true as kids get old.
Yeah. What I like to do with my son was when he was about 2 years old, I'd put him in the backyard with a rope and a javelina hog. And I'd say, if we're gonna have dinner tonight, you're gonna have to catch it. And he's tough as nails, that guy. Oh my gosh. So you're saying that these things would actually have the opposite effect?
Yes, I think they would. And I think I think there's also certainly such a thing as being an overprotective parent, and especially as kids get older, we can make mistakes on the other side by protecting them too much from adversity.
I was so hoping, Paul, that you would say it depends on the age of the hog. That was the correct answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're talking about, middle schoolers and teenagers, if we're overprotective, they get this opposite message, which is that we don't trust them to actually be able to handle themselves in the world, right? So another quality that psychologists talk about as being really important in the development of these non-cognitive strengths like grit is autonomy, having a sense of your own autonomy, that you can actually do things. And when we protect our kids too much, especially when they're older, that's exactly what they don't get. They don't get that sense that anyone believes that they can do things on their own. So it's a tricky balance, I think. And definitely there's things change as kids get older. We want to give them lots more, love and support in infancy, and give them more autonomy as they get older. But I think there are still, so I have a 5-year-old and an 11-year-old, and with the 11-year-old, who has a fair amount of autonomy, still, I think the most important thing that I can do for him is help talk him through these moments of crisis, these moments of failure. And I think the difficult thing for parents is to be able to communicate that, like, I care about this moment. I care about how you're doing. I care about your feelings in this moment, but I'm not going to solve this problem for you, right? You can do it on your own. And getting that right, I get it wrong at least half the time. Getting that right is, I think, one of the most important tricks of parenthood.
Is it too late by the time they're young adults?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that parenting never really ends, you know? I think there are still those moments where your kids have problems, have crises. And if you're lucky, they'll seek your advice and talk to you about them. And again, I think, you know, there are parents, even of young adults, who are still try to solve those problems for them.
Right.
And I don't think that's helpful, right? I think you can commiserate, you can empathize, you can show your support, but still say, you know, I trust you to work this out. I trust you to solve this.
You know, the other day I was walking my dog, and there's a lot of foot traffic in Santa Monica now. And I saw Dad doing that. You know what it is the second you see it, which is he's running with his kid, little kid. And he's saying to the kid, oh, my gosh, you're beating me. Right? You're faster than me. Little kid. And I used to do that with my kids, too. It was really fun. They'd get all excited that they were going to beat their mom in a race. Is that a bad idea?
No, it's a great idea. It's great. I mean, you know, that like I feel like this the idea that we have to like be mean to our kids and beat them in foot races and, you know, like that is going to lead to them being sort of stronger and more resilient. It's just not true. You know, I think again, it's possible to go too far the other way.
It doesn't also make them not want to run faster?
I mean, that wasn't my experience with my kids.
I can already beat mom, so there you go.
No, they love it.
So let me ask you this, Paul. What about me and Paula? Is it too late for us to develop grit, or am I just going to freak out every time the doorbell rings for the rest of my life?
Is that true of you?
No, it's not really true. But can we develop grit?
He's very unflappable.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I really believe that people can change, right? I think basically what we're talking about is just like, can you change as an adult? Can you deal with the problems of your life any better than you did 10 years ago? And there's lots of examples of people who get stuck and don't really change, but there are lots of examples of people who do. And to me, that's not sort of specific to grit. That's not about like, doing grit exercises or grit training as an adult. It's about all of the things that help us change. It's about like coming to understand yourself better, coming to, you know, sort of like coming to terms with what motivates you in life. And I think that happens to people at all stages of life.
One of the things I like to do is when I see a stranger's little kid running, I come up beside him and then just take off. And I go, hey, I beat you. It just, you know, builds up my self-esteem.
Well, you know, Dr. Angela Duckworth wrote, grit is living life like it's a marathon, not a sprint. Take that one to the bank, kid. Stay tuned to find out more about hitting the wall as you live a grittier life. The Cat of the Week is Georgia from Eugene, Oregon.
Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot. With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include 2 or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made, plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, It's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
And we're back with author Paul Tough. All right, Paul, we've been talking about this whole grit thing. Tell me, how is grit related to IQ, or is it?
So in my books, I talk about this whole sort of suite of what are sometimes called non-cognitive skills or character strengths. So they certainly include grit and perseverance. They also include things like curiosity and optimism, conscientiousness and self-control. And what researchers have found, it's difficult to sort of parse these things out and say this one's more important than that one. But what researchers have found is this whole collection of non-cognitive skills, what psychologists and educators sometimes call your character, that matters at least as much as IQ in your long-term success.
So being smart doesn't make you gritty.
No. The smart intelligence and grit are definitely disconnected. I think the grit is connected to some of these other non-cognitive skills, but that whole collection of non-cognitive skills is a better predictor of how well people are going to do in life than their intelligence as measured on IQ tests.
I was with you. I was sort of excited about these non-cognitive skills until I heard self-control.
That's not your favorite.
Well, I just, you know, I have a problem where I have a really hard time stopping talking. And that strikes me as a big self-control problem. And every day I get up and tell myself I'm going to solve that. And every day I fail. Some of the other non-cognitive skills, though, I'm really humming on.
How do you differentiate grit from gumption?
Good question. So gumption, man, that's like it's a good grandfather word.
Yeah.
Can I just throw pluck in there?
Yeah, grit, pluck. I think your next book needs to be called Grit, Pluck, and Gumption and How We Tell Them Apart.
Yeah.
All right. I want to do some role playing here because Paul, you were talking about how to kind of teach grit to a kid or how you might help them when they run across failures. Can we do a little role playing where Paula Poundstone is now once again a young kid and she's reached a failure in her life and you be the dad who can impart a little grit. Can you show us how to deal with her encountering failure in her life?
Sure, Paula, you're going to give me a moment of failure.
Yes. Let's see.
Well, Paul, you got to be this person. Tell Daddy Paul. You know.
Okay. So. Oh. All right. All right. So, Dad. Why am I older than you? That's my first question.
We got a complicated family. I can't go into that.
Yeah. Dad, I've always felt awkward about that. And on this day where I have yet another failure, I thought I'd bring it up. Dad, I was running for class president of my sixth grade class and Amy Hayes won. And, I managed not to cry while I was in school, but I spent the afternoon crying in my room.
Paula, I'm really sorry to hear that. That's rough. Are you going to run again next year?
Not for the sixth grade, Dad, unless I have to repeat the sixth grade.
Well, I just saw your report card, and I've got, while you're already feeling bad, I've got some more bad news for you.
Oh, no. This has gone off the rails.
So there's more than one failure there. Is there, Dad? Do you really think this is the time to bring that up?
Paula Poundstone, you stop sassing your father.
Is that Mom?
Yeah, of course, honey. I'm appalled that you're letting your kid push you around like that, Paul. What kind of father are you? Get back in there and teach her some grit.
This is where the javelina in the backyard comes in.
Dad, right. Do I have to go in the backyard with the rope and the javelina?
Yes, you have to get dinner. I mean, I don't care about the election. It's time to get dinner.
I tried so hard. That was the thing. You know, the hardest thing, Dad, is that nothing rhymes with poundstone. So when I tried to make a slogan, it really held me back. And let's be honest, there are no issues in the sixth grade. We have no power. So, all right, let me think of another one. Okay. All right, so now, Paul, I'm in high school. And I feel like should I be younger? Should I be younger? I try to think of something that happened when I was younger.
I feel like this is not going in a productive direction at this point.
What do you mean?
I feel like we could just role play the rest of the interview. It'd be kind of fun.
It is fun.
Okay, wait. No, let me get younger. Okay, wait. I have to think about something that I failed at when I was younger. Surely there were more.
How about tying your shoes, Paula? Okay.
Oh, my God. I couldn't tie my shoes for the longest time. I just wasn't getting it for the longest time. So what would you... So, Dad, will you tie my shoes?
You know, you're 15, Paula. I think it is time. I believe in you. I really think you can do it.
Dad,
we worked on this all last year.
You know what, Dad? You made a shitload of money off that book about grit, curiosity, and hidden power of character. How come you won't buy me some loafers?
Some Velcro shoes?
Yeah.
I think...
I want to return to this interview.
No, I'm really liking this. Paul's a great dad.
Paul, let's apply this, and I think you're probably going through this in your life as a dad right now, and it is grit-related. Our kids are going to school on Zoom, and it's super frustrating when things go wrong. Are there some basic actions or habits that we can use to help the kids get through, you know, the inevitable? I mean, there's so much drama going on around just getting through a school day on Zoom.
There is. I mean, you know, even beyond Zoom, I think this is an intense moment for a lot of families. I mean, you know, there's some good things about it, right? Like we're spending a lot of time together, which can be good or can be bad. I think a lot of families are getting closer, but there's no question there are some new stresses, certainly with school, but with everything else, with not seeing friends, with, you know, families that are suffering job losses and illness. And so I think the main thing that we can do to help our kids is to just have patience right now, right? And to understand that this is not going to be a normal school year, or at least a normal school semester, that kids are not going to be able to do everything perfectly the way that they might in another year. And I think it doesn't mean we give up. It doesn't mean that we just write this semester off. But I think we've got to just have like a little bit more patience, a little bit more, give our kids a little bit more leeway in how they make it through this period.
So what about, I guess if we're talking about maybe a more normal time, what about sports for your kids? Is that a grit builder?
Yeah, I think it really is. You know, it's interesting. In my book, How Children Succeed, one of the teachers who I wrote about, who I thought was the best grit instructor who I met, was this teacher who never talked about grit at all. She was a chess coach. And so, you know, a chess coach gives us a very different image than the sort of like Gene Hackman basketball coach or the football coach. It seems like a pretty,
if you're a
like,
chess coach, they
game.
Don't even give you a whistle most of the time.
Yeah.
They don't.
I had a math coach that used a whistle. And he'd
really?
Go, yeah, he'd wow. like blow the whistle in your ear and go, you didn't carry the two. Yeah.
It's an emotional thing. So this was, you know, she was an amazing coach. Sure, her team was this middle school team in a public school in Brooklyn. They were fantastic at chess, but they still would lose all the time, right? Anytime you play chess, you lose. And it's what I think she did that was so effective with her class was help to talk them through these moments where they would fail. And the way she did it was by analyzing exactly what they did wrong, right? Which you might think is a really sort of painful way to experience your failures. Like, let's parse it out. Let's see exactly the mistake that you made. But actually, I think that's really valuable. And I think it's valuable in school, and I think it's valuable at home as well. Because when you fail, when Paula like lost her election to
Amy Hayes,
or whatever
Amy
her name
Hayes,
was.
But right, I've Hayes, forgotten all about it. Amy Hayes.
Like that, that just feels like, well, you know, I'm a terrible person, right? There's nothing that I could do differently.
Right.
But when, you know, a chess coach or a basketball coach or anybody else sits you down and says like, no, it's not, you didn't make every mistake. You made this particular mistake on, you know, move 38 in your chess game. Then you can understand that that's a failure that you can come back from, right? Because it's something that you can actually fix. So that's why I feel like coaches are in this sort of a unusual position to help young people develop grit. And all of us, I think, have to become slightly better coaches in order to help our kids do better.
Rub their nose in it. Got it.
Exactly.
Hey, Paul, let's talk about grit and gender. Is there a grittier gender? Are we not teaching grit correctly to one gender more than the other?
So the place in the literature about non-cognitive skills where there's a real gender gap is not grit, it's self-control. And so, Paula, you were saying self-control was not your strong suit.
No, it isn't.
In general, actually, it is girls who have more self-control than boys, as anyone who's raised boys can attest. And one of the things that is true now when you look at academics is that girls are doing better in school, like at every level, right?
Yeah.
So it's certainly true in elementary, middle, and high school, but it's true like on PhD programs, it's true in math, it's true just all down the line. And that is not necessarily because they're smarter, although we can debate that, but it is because they have better strategies for making it through the day, for, you know, sticking with their work, for getting things done. And that really plays out in
why do they have better strategies?
I think there is, I think there's something cultural and I think there is something intrinsic, right? I think that it is true that girls are better able to manage those intense emotions. But I also think we create sort of cultural ideas about what boys can do and what girls could do. And we sometimes, I think, force girls to be too self-controlled, too straight-laced. That has a lot of downsides. But when it comes to school, it's a really effective thing.
Yeah, it's a big fucking problem for me being too straight-laced.
Absolutely. Listen up, Paula. So, Paul, your newest book is The Years That Matter Most. Tell us what that's about. What year matters most?
That book is about college. It is about the years right after high school. And it's really about higher education and social mobility. And so how our system of colleges and universities has sort of conspired to make it hard for low-income and first-generation students to succeed after high school. There are certainly examples of moments where low-income kids manage to get to a great college, and that is one of the best and most effective instruments of social mobility. But for the nation as a whole, college right now is this big sorting system that makes it easier for kids who grow up in affluence to go further and do better, and makes it harder for those who grow up with fewer resources to succeed. So I look at that from lots of different perspectives. I follow some students through the high school and into college.
Can't you get arrested doing that?
follow from a respectful distance.
It's a little creepy, Paul. That's all I'm saying.
And like hung out with admissions officers, spent some time at the University of Texas, took a calculus class. And so I put all these stories together to try to paint a picture of where higher education is right now.
So not to name names, but the people who cheated to get their kids into colleges, right? And it's not just the names that we know. It's more than that.
For sure.
Does that end up being a leg up to those kids, or especially the ones that really wouldn't have gotten into those schools any other way, and therefore don't really have the capacity for success within those institutions? Does it end up benefiting them?
Well, I think it's a good question. So, you know, so I did a bunch of reporting with this one SAT tutor in Washington, D.C., who was like, is the most exclusive, most sought after SAT tutor. He charges $400 an hour. So his services are legal, right? Unlike what happened in the Varsity Blues scandal.
Wow.
But there's something very reminiscent of what was going on in the Varsity Blues scandal, right? These are parents paying an enormous amount of money to get their kids into college. And just the fact that it's legal doesn't mean that it's right. And it doesn't mean that it's necessarily helping those kids. So, and I think it's a real conundrum. Like, there is data that shows that getting into a highly selective college does pay off in terms of your income. But I think it goes back to this grit and parenting question that we've been talking about. These are, you know, parents who are parents of young adults, right? Of teenagers who are paving the way for them, acting like snowplow parents, right? Getting every possible obstacle out of the way. And I don't think that works. You know, I think that is depriving young people of those opportunities to experience failure, to have some setbacks, to find their own way around those problems. And I think when parents go that far, certainly up past the point of illegality, it is really undermining those kids rather than helping them.
Interesting. Well, thanks to you, Paul, we've learned about grit and its importance in our lives. And now we're going to take that information and run it through the old Pounce-donator. Paula?
Great. Tim, if I can get just a little bit of, you know, ambiance music, I'll tell you what the Pounce-donator spit out. Well, Pilgrim, everybody needs grit just to get through life, but right now we're riding through the meanest period we've ever known. You're gonna need grit, Pilgrim, and your kid's gonna need grit. Barrels of it. Your kid's gotta fail and process that failure. Learn from it. You gotta be there for them, but don't stand in the way of their failures unless it's a safety issue. Don't stand and watch them drown, but let them strike out. Let them think they're in gallery view when they're in speaker view. Let them talk while they're muted. Let them spill some milk, burn some cookies, come in last. The part where you come in is example. Show them. Show them how to get up and get back on the horse. Show them there'll be another day. Show them finding joy in little things. Show them caring. Show them stick-to-itiveness. Show them you don't always get what you want when you want it, but that doesn't mean you quit. Show them pluck and gumption. Hell, name them pluck and gumption. That'll teach them.
He is the author most recently of The Years That Matter Most, How College Makes Us or Breaks Us. Thank you so much, Paul Tough, for being on our show. That was fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. I have to confess, about halfway through the interview, I was ready to give up.
but why didn't you, Paula?
Because I got grit. I got pluck.
You got gumption.
I do.
You got giddy up.
I got javelina hogs and a rope in my backyard, and I'm going to go get dinner.
Coming up, your descriptions of this podcast. Can this show ever be captured in a one-liner, or are we destined to run free of definition? We'll hear our beloved Nobody's best efforts to corral this show into a description. That's coming up after this.
Right after this.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Holly and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the best. Okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Hey,
listener. It's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Whoa! Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Fun fact, koala bears are one of the few species that have human-like fingerprints, which lends a vital clue as to the identity of Melbourne's eucalyptus bandit.
We now join the French Trump weekly Friday press conference in progress.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Gwen Ifill, PBS News Hour. During your unscheduled visit to Walter Reed Hospital months ago, why did you ask the doctors and staff to sign a non-disclosure agreement?
C'est sur ma penny.
Your what, sir?
Ma penny.
His what? What?
They saw his
what? What is he talking about?
Did you get that?
Wait, do you know what he means by that? Is that what
is? Is it a kind of prostate?
His penis. They saw his penis.
Next question.
And we're back.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam, what? Answer the phone.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Hello?
Adam, it's me, Penelope Vanderbottom.
Penelope Vanderbottom, what a pleasure to hear from you. To what do I owe the pleasure?
I'm so excited. I have made a major art world find, Adam. You know, Van Gogh couldn't afford to pay models, so he got himself a mirror, and he painted himself. It was a method of developing his skills. It is thought that between the years of 1886 and 1889, that's 3 years, Adam, Van Gogh painted over 30 self-portraits. But guess what, Adam?
What?
I found a Van Gogh self-portrait in Paula Poundstone's home. It was in Wendell's garage, so it's amazing that anyone could find it. It's beautiful. It looks much more like Kirk Douglas in this portrait. It has his sloping forehead and strawberry blonde hair. The background is a bright pink with kind of a Bing cherry colored swirl. It's quite a find.
The color palette you're describing and the fact that it looks like Kurt Russell?
Kurt Douglas. Not Kurt Russell. Douglas. What are you thinking? Kurt Russell, that's the computer who wore tennis shoes. That's not Kurt Douglas.
You're right. Kirk Douglas is a different person. But the fact that the color palette you're describing and the fact that it looks like Kirk Douglas. Yes, I said Kirk Douglas. It's amusing. It sounds like that's a portrait of Kirk Douglas that you've got there.
No. I am a forensic. art appraiser, and so I would know the difference between Kirk Douglas and Van Gogh. You know, Van Gogh used to be roommates with Gauguin, whereas Kirk Douglas wasn't. That's one difference.
Yes.
You know, did you know that Gauguin would sometimes wake up at night to see Van Gogh standing over him, staring at him? And so Gauguin moved out, because that's not what you want in a roommate, do you?
No, that makes it's for
a, it's
terrible.
It's an extraordinary find. Extraordinary find. I was hoping you'd be more excited.
Well, you're discovering all these masterworks in Paula Poundstone's Santa Monica house, and I suppose I kind of doubt the veracity of your finds, nor do I understand why someone as learned as you are spending so much time trolling around Paula's house.
Well, you know, I was walking by one night, and I thought I noticed something peeking out from behind her bookshelves, and that was the first time I did. That's when I discovered the Mona Lisa, and it was a huge discovery, the Mona Lisa. And since then, I have just found, missing artwork after missing artwork here in the, you know, Paula doesn't own this home, by the way, Adam. She rents it, so technically these things don't belong to her, but who needs to know that? All right, Adam, I'm yes. gonna have to go now. I think I see America Sat peeking out from behind the videotapes.
Okay, well, you go ahead and do that. And pleasure having you on the show. You were the 94th caller, by the way, in our 100th caller contest.
Oh, I wasn't calling for the contest.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, it does. As much as I enjoy you, Adam, I don't want to hang out with you after the game. I'm much too busy in the art world.
I totally understand, and I will spare you that if I possibly can. Hello? I guess she's gone.
Yeah, oh, Paula? Yeah. She's so busy. Gosh.
Well, that's okay, because as it turns out, Paula Poundstone, you and I are very busy all of a sudden. Well, we're always very busy.
We are.
But something very special is in the offing. You might recall our vocabulary contest that we've mentioned a few hundred times.
Yes, I've been hanging on the edge of my seat waiting to find out about the vocabulary contest.
Well, yeah, we've been running it at show 109. We hit all those vocabulary words. Our listeners have been super busy trying to figure out if they could guess every word that we mentioned in it. Paula, we have a winner.
No.
Yes, we just found out this just in from Tony Anita Hall. Somebody has won that darn vocabulary contest and will, as a result, win you and me attending a party with them on Zoom and 100 of their closest friends.
Oh, you know what? I'm bringing the chips. Cool. I am so looking forward to this. So when do we find out who won?
Next week, as Tony Anita Hull gathers information about our winner, next week we're going to announce the winner right here live on our pre-taped podcast.
This is sort of like Joe Biden's vice presidential pick. Remember how it was like weeks and weeks of, you know, still vetting, still thinking?
Yep, it's exactly that.
Yeah. So next week we're going to tell you who the winner is. And they don't have to have 100 friends.
Yeah, they could have less than 100 friends. And for all the listeners know, the winner could be Kamala Harris.
It could be. It absolutely could be.
So tune in next week and find out. All right, moving on. Hey, Paula, you are often asked to describe nobody listens to Paula Poundstone, right? And you find that to be difficult.
It is kind of difficult. I say stuff like I say, it's me and my partner, Adam Felber, and we interviewed somebody that knows a lot about a topic, and it's funny. That's how I say it.
I just fell asleep during that description of our very entertaining show.
Yeah, it's compelling the way I do it.
And it's the opposite of compelling. But, you know, we laid down that challenge to describing our podcast to our listeners. And, you know, as you know, nobody's have really, over the months, stepped up to the task to the point where if you were to go to paulapoundstone.com right now, you would see splashed across near the top of the page rotating quotes from our listeners of describing the show. It's really been heartening that they can do such a good job of describing it.
They do a great job of describing it. That's my favorite part of the website, actually, is those listener descriptions that are up on the left-hand side. You can't miss it, you guys.
But now, let's bring out some new candidates for show descriptions. We have our own Tony Anita Hull. Human guinea pig Tony Anita Hull is it's going to step up to the microphone. Bonnie Burns, a microphone is what you talk into when you're recording something.
Thank you, Adam. I didn't know that after 30 years in show business.
Well, you should have. Just ask Kevin.
Yeah.
Tony, step on Kevin?
Up. Tony, want to step on up? Tony Anita Hull, everybody.
I'm ready.
All right.
Okay.
Lay him on us.
Okay. First one is from Lois Schmidt. Imagine the Mad Hatter's Tea Party hosting a weekly TED Talk.
Ooh, I like that.
That's really nice.
Yeah, that is really nice. Yeah, Lois, nice job. Lois Schmidt, of course, being Mrs. Schmidt's youngest.
Yes.
Is right. Bonnie crinkling?
Bonnie, was that you crinkling?
No, my earplug was coming out.
Your earplug was coming out, so you felt the need to shuffle papers?
No, I'm not shuffling papers.
Wait a minute.
Smith.
Your earplug was coming out without going to the doctor?
Go back to Lois Schmidt.
Okay.
She sounds like she's under a log right now. She's waving us off. Go back. Go back to Lois Schmidt. Don't tell anybody I'm here. Go back to Lois Schmidt. All right, Tony, what else you got?
At the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, who's Bonnie? I think, obviously, you're the Mad Hatter there, Paula, and I fear I might be the White Rabbit. But who's Bonnie?
Bonnie's Alice.
I thought I'd be Alice.
Yeah, I was going to say Tony was Alice, and Bonnie might be the doormat.
I'm an overweight Alice.
You're don't not give overweight,
Kevin,
Bonnie.
Don't give Kevin
your,
any
don't
more
talk
ammunition.
About my friend Bonnie like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tony.
You're just loading Kevin for bear.
What did Alice do? She went, ooh. Is that what she did? She was always surprised. Ooh, ooh.
You didn't read Alice in Wonderland?
No, I did.
What is that sound you're making?
Like,
did you watch some kind of like 1975 softcore porn version of Alice in Wonderland? No.
You said, what did Alice
was
do?
That?
Didn't ooh, she make, ooh, like, ooh. Wasn't she always surprised? Okay, what was the noise when she went through the rabbit hole?
No, you know what? You're thinking of Cher's backup singers. Cher's backup singers went,
doo-wop.
Yeah, no, Alice didn't do that.
She didn't have a signature.
That always bothered me.
She didn't have a signature sound, Bonnie. She would say she would exclaim things like, "Oh, curiouser and curiouser," and stuff like that.
Yeah,
oh,
and she cried a lot
about that part.
Yeah. Okay. Well. But, yeah. Okay. In the presentation, you're going to have to rehearse. I think. All right, Tony. What else? Thank you, Lois Schmidt. That was great. What else do you have, Tony? Who's there?
Oh my god.
I'm sure I heard a noise.
Is that Boo Radley behind that door?
All right, Tony, give us another one.
Here's one from Kimberly Allman. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is a full-service buffet of information and comedy with neither sneeze guards nor utensils.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's nice. That kind of reminds me of Tony's upcoming cruise in December. She'll have to be reporting back. A full service buffet. A full service buffet of information and comedy. I feel that we do have sneeze guards. Let me just say that. We may dig in with our hands, but we do have sneeze guards, Kimberly.
That's right. As opposed to Tony's upcoming cruise, which is just going to feature, you know, a Corona dance night on every Saturday.
Exactly.
Everybody lick your food and pass it to the right.
Yeah, they have one event on the new Corona cruise where they have a singles dance, and the way that you tell someone you want to dance with them is you spit on their mask. And I think you're really going to enjoy that, Tony.
I can't wait.
Yeah. The only time they're 6 feet apart is when they're in the lifeboats.
it's gonna be quite a cruise, Tony.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kimberly. You have anything else in that hopper for us, Tony?
I do. This is from Ashling Fay. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
Ashley Fay.
I believe I'm saying it right, yeah. It's an Irish name. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. The comedy podcast is like a comedy roast where we're all in the chair. Seriously, the only people Paula and Adam hate more than their listeners are their advertisers.
Oh, my God.
Wait. The only people they hate more than their listeners
than
are their
advertisers?
Listeners
are their advertisers.
That's ridiculous.
We don't hate our listeners, nor our advertisers. I can't. Ashley?
Wow.
What
Fuck you, Ashley.
Ashley Fay, you get in here right now. What'd you say
Ashley
that for?
Ashley Fay, you go outside and pick yourself a switch and bring it into me.
Honestly, Ashley Fay, now you're telling stories. That is not true. You're going to have to go apologize to every one of them listeners. Even the ones Paul and Adam hate. You go on out there. That is not nice talk, and that's not the kind of thing that comes from nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
Absolutely
Ashley,
not.
Ashley Fay, you come back here. Ashley Fay. All right, then don't come home tonight. I can't believe you said that, Ashley.
Well, you know, Paula, I have to say that in recent weeks, to Ashley's point, when we do our mailbag segment and we field criticisms from our listeners, we don't always take it really well.
That's a handful of whiny listeners. That's not Ashley Fay. Ashley Fay, you're taking things out of context. You put them back in context right now. You get
Ashley
in this
Fay,
house.
You got to go up to that, march right up to that bathroom, take a bar of soap and put it in your mouth for an hour.
That's exactly right, Ashley Fay. You're going to be blowing bubbles out of your nose.
I think she's Irish.
Oh, Ashley, you've let down the whole family. It's the shame of the neighborhood. You're going to have to walk the cliffs tonight.
She's not Irish. Ashley Fay, you come in here and eat some Lucky Charms. You are not Irish.
All right.
I can't believe Ashley Fay says that.
I know. And your comments are said with love. And we turn down a lot of sponsors that we don't think are right and that we don't endorse. Ashley.
Ashley Fay, I'm not yelling. I'm trying to talk to you about a mistake that you've made. You don't want to keep making mistakes, do you, Ashley Fay? No, you don't. You want to correct your mistake and move on. Now, you tell the people, you tell the listeners that Adam and I love, L-O-V-E, love. We love our listeners and our sponsors. You write that
and
down.
Sometimes you just have to whip them into shape. That's all. It's out of love.
Sometimes they're a little rough around the edges, and we might file at it. Yes, but that's not the same as fading.
Sometimes we got to smooth you out.
Sometimes they're a little rough, and we maybe lubricate them. That's it.
Well, that just took a
turn.
You
know, like a lotion, like a Jergens or something. That kind of lubricant.
Right,
not the
course.
Other kind of lubricant, Bonnie Burns. You're thinking of a different kind of lubricant.
Yeah. We're talking about the kind of lubricant you should be using on your door, Bonnie.
No, we're talking about the kind of lubricant where you're up in your bed and you go, oh, shit, I left it downstairs. And then you run downstairs and you look for the lubricant. You can't find it. And then you run back upstairs. And then you run back downstairs.
What the hell is going on
here? And then you say, oh, the lubricant was in my pocket the whole time.
Stop.
And it was hard to find in your pocket because you'd already taken it out of the bottle.
Yeah, that's right. All the loop. Oh, now it's
you
all over my pocket.
Oh, wouldn't you know it? I got me another pocket full of loose lubricant.
Okay, everyone, stop saying lubricant.
Just wait there. Just wait there, gentleman caller. I gotta go do some laundry downstairs. There's lubricant all over.
Maybe you heard my first album, Pocket Full of Lubricant.
Oh, my. I am oozing lubricant everywhere like a...
Oh, my Lord.
It's like a purulent wound the way I'm oozing lubricant. Oh,
Jesus Christ, Paul.
Shannon, can you run and get my lubricant? Oh my God. Oh. I'll be right back. I gotta run downstairs. Does anybody have a Tide Pod? I gotta wash these pockets. We don't even really need listeners.
Nope. You know, one thing is for sure, my pants are never gonna squeak.
Now, you see, Ashley Faye, if we were to have a lubricant advertiser,
we wouldn't be hating on them.
No, we love lubricant. Bonnie, tell them.
No. That is a box that we should not be opening. And I didn't mean it like that.
Oh.
I meant it's a subject we should not be broaching.
I'm sad.
Oh, right. My God.
Hey, Paula. Paula, let's talk about your merchandise.
Okay, wait. Before you do that, what's the prize? What? Do they get a coin? Do they get a soap?
Oh.
I had a note for us to figure this out before we did the segment, but I forgot to mention it.
You were so organized.
You're so.
You know what? It's downstairs. Go get it.
Paula, do you want to pick a favorite and we'll award a Thomas Coyne coin?
Do I want to? Well, you know what? My favorite is Imagine the Mad Hatter's Tea Party hosting a weekly TED Talk. That was my favorite. Lois Schmitz.
Wait, Bonnie, hold on a second, Paula.
What are you doing?
Bonnie, are you eating your microphone?
Bonnie. No, could you hear that?
Yes! What are you doing?
Okay.
What are you doing?
No, Kevin, you were right. I'm totally on Kevin's side now in the debate. Bonnie, what are you doing? Don't put lubricant on the microphone. What are you doing?
What? And now you sound like you're at the bottom of a well. What the hell is going
like
on?
You sound like you're talking into your pillow.
Oh, Bonnie. I am. Okay, wait. I'll move.
This is like a...
30 years in the business, Bonnie. I am completely on Kevin's side now.
Yeah. Okay. Kevin's a goddamn genius.
Okay, how's that?
That's better.
That's better.
It's better.
Yeah. Much better.
This is the point at which, at a slumber party, where the mother has to come in and go, all right, that's enough.
Yeah. And I feel like that's my job here. So, Paula, pick
time.
A winner.
It's time. Let's stop this. Let's stop this now and go to sleep. You're all going to be cranky in the morning. I did, Adam. I picked Lois Schmidt, if you'll recall. It was just before Bonnie buried her face in her pillow and began talking.
I know. Now, all right, so Lois Schmidt, congratulations. We'll be sending you your prize for Imagine a Mad Hatter's Tea Party hosting a weekly TED Talk. That's terrific. And Bonnie, move away from the mic!
I'm not, really? Okay. All right.
Oh, my God. I could have all been right. Killed. Shannon, now, could you come in here?
Paula, let's talk about your merchandise.
Adam, I often dream of being in a medically induced coma, at least until February, but it just doesn't seem practical. My second choice is to have time to curl up with a good book. If our listeners can't fit in a medically induced coma right now and would like to curl up with a good book instead, my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, is available in paperback or on CD at the store at my website, paulapoundstone.com, or you could support your favorite bookstore by getting it from them. Booklist calls it smart, sweet, and laugh-out-loud funny balm for exceedingly stressful times. When might that be? And by the way, you guys, I'm happy to autograph a copy just for you. Some of our listeners also, Adam, are enjoying a break from the purulent year of 2020 by watching my goofy new game show, Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone on YouTube and Facebook, in case Vlad wants to watch. Check it out. And if you like it, tell only your closest friends.
Well, that is a very fun show. And speaking of fun shows, the baseball season is coming to a close. The postseason is in full swing. And if you want to check out Jeff Cesario and me doing our Starburn Sports simulcast, well, check your local baseball schedule and check my Twitter feed because we will be simulcasting those games in a comedic fashion. You watch on ESPN or on TBS and you listen to us at starburnsports.com.
So it's you guys. So you guys are covering the game, right? You're yeah. Doing the color commentary on the games. You and yep. Jeff Cesario, who I love. And what kinds of stuff do you say about Babe Ruth?
Well, we don't really say a lot about Babe Ruth, Paula, because he's what sports fans call dead.
Oh.
And not very much in the game anymore.
So maybe you'll say like Babe Ruth is up. He's doing his practice swings, and then Jeff will go, he's dead, Adam. Is that right?
Yes. It's very much like that, except we don't pretend that Babe Ruth is up, because we're literally watching a game that's happening live.
Oh, I see. I see.
If you want to enter our theme song contest, everybody, send your song to us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, that's nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com, which is where you send all of your communiques to us. That's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Lee Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Paul Tuff. And thanks to our house band, Tim Freeman. Our show is produced by Paula Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Ho. Mixing by Michael Hoagie. Starburns production by Land Romo. And thank you so much to current intern Shannon and former intern Doug Gutton, but not forgotten. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
Honey, could you go downstairs and grab me the lubricant? wait a minute, honey. No, come back upstairs. Don't worry about it. It's been in my pocket the whole time.
Pocket full of lubricant.
My first album.
Oh, damn it. Something else I left downstairs.
It was the bottle that the lubricant goes in.
Oh, the lid to the lubricant. Oh.
Yeah, that explains these pockets.
Ashley?
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.